We are holding on Nunheim Bay, first line, wide lines. One of the cases we talked about in the Mishnah was Shepetsua Lissim, where robbers broke open the barn where an animal was being kept. We said that in that case, they're potter unless they actually took it out. They're potter from the damages that the animal causes unless they actually take it out. So that leads even if they open the gate. So the Gemara is going to start off with a Braisa that mentions a couple of different cases where even though a person is potter in the sense that the Beis Din can't force them to pay, they're still chayav in Hashem's judgment. And this is one of them. Tanya. What does it mean chayav b'din shamayim in these various cases? There is a big machlokas among the Rishonim what exactly it means. Does it mean that, does Beis Din have any jurisdiction over the matter at all? Or is it just if the person wants to avoid punishment by the Eivishter, then he better pay the guy back? Or is it maybe Beis Din does have a limited jurisdiction over the matter? For example, if the Nizik was Teufis money from the Mazik in a case where the Mazik's only Chayav B'Din Shamayim, can he keep it or not? That's one of the discussions in the postgame on this. If the Nizik was Teufis, if the Nizik managed to get a hold of some money or Nechasim or whatever that belonged to the Mazik, in a case where the Mazik was only Chayav B'Din Shamayim, can he keep it? Or maybe not. Maybe Chayav B'Din Shamayim means it's up to the Mazik himself to decide, I want to do tshuva, I want to avoid the Eivishter's punishment, therefore I'll pay. But even if the Nizik takes something, then Beis Din would force him to return it. That's another way of looking at it. There's also the question, Maharam Mintz, I think it is, talks about the idea, one of the early Achronim, talks about the idea that Beis Din can sort of use social pressure over here. They can make an announcement in Shul. They can have an announcement made in Shul, basically, you know, Pliny did such and such a hezek to Pliny. However, we Beis Din have no jurisdiction over the matter. But you should know that he really does, you know, he has caused this hezek and B'din Shamayim is chayev and owes him X amount.
And all of that because it's grammar.
We're going to talk about the grammar, but yeah. The first thing is we're going to talk about Agroma. Later on in the Soviet, we'll see some other examples. So, Tanya, Amar Rav Yeshua, Arba Dvarim, there are four things that are Oysa Oysa, Potter Medina, Adam B'chai B'din Shemayim. If a person does any of these things, he's Potter from human dinim, basically because of Groma. B'chai B'din Shemayim, but he's Chayiv in Hashem's judgment. Again, what that means according to the various permutations that we just talked about. But Elohim, number one, a poter together b'fnei behemes chaver. Number one, somebody who breaks open a gate in the presence of somebody else's animal, and the animal goes out and causes damage. Actually, Rashi says differently. Rashi says that the animal goes and runs away, not even talking about the animal damaging.
So
wait. Let's first talk about the case in the Gemara, and then we'll go back and discuss what exactly we're dealing with here. Number two, our kofif kamosish chaver b'fnei adleika. If somebody bends over somebody's standing grain, somebody's field with grain in it, in the presence of a fire, each of these things, we're going to analyze and see what exactly the case is. But basically, you're talking about there's a fire in the area, and this person goes and bends down the stalks, either, as we'll see in the Gemara, either that makes it more likely for them to be burned by fire, or it means that he covers them. We'll see. We'll get to that in a few lines. Number three, if somebody hires false witnesses to testify in Beis Din. And number four, by a day, Eidos L'chaveira ve'enemeid lo, if somebody knows Eidos that could benefit somebody else financially and doesn't go and say the Eidos in Beis Din. Let's analyze them. Number one, Omamar, a poter together b'fnei behemes chaveira. We have to ask, hey, chidomi, what kind of case are we talking about over here where we broke it open? Elaim of a coastal body, are we talking about that it was a good, strong wall? Well, the beginning of an Adam Namini Chayev, then he should be Chayev in a human based in also. We must be talking about a weak wall. So what Chiyuv are we talking about over here? So again, Rashi learns that we're talking about over here a Chiyuv for that when we said Potem Adid Adam Chayev in Shemayim, we meant as far as the animal running away. The person breaking the wall is only a grump. He didn't directly take out the animal. He just broke down the wall, and therefore the animal was able to escape. that would be Grama. But the Gemara is asking, shouldn't he at least be chayev for the wall that he destroyed? The wall is also worth money. And the answer is no, that it's kosher ru'ua, that it's a shaky wall, so anyway the owner was going to have to tear it down. So you can't really be mechayev, the guy who tore it down, you can't really be mechayev. What?
The owner was all money.
No, we're not talking about so shaky that it was a hazard to anybody passing by. We're, you know, but whatever, the point is, it was a wall that wasn't going to last much longer anyhow, and therefore doesn't really have a monetary value. That's how Rashi learns, and Tosfos learns pretty much the same way also. The Rambam has a whole different understanding of it. The Rambam writes in a tshuva to Chachmei Lunel, to the Chacham of Lunel in southern France, that it can't be talking about the chiyuv for the wall or not. Why does the Chacham mention the animal? According to Rashi and according to Tosfos, then the point is, so again, you have three different things to consider. You have the wall, you have the animal itself going and getting lost, and then you have the damages that the animal does. Rashi mentions specifically the animal getting lost. The Pashtus, though, the same thing would apply as according to them as far as the animal causing them. Same thing, it's a grama, which is what our Mishnah said. That trips to a listim, then the listim, then everybody's potter. So the owner is potter because he didn't know it was an oinus, and they're potter because they didn't actually cause the damage, it was indirect.
Why our Mishnah talks about listim when here we're not talking about listim?
Well, okay, one second. So that as well as the fact that why Rechlal are we mentioning breaking it in the presence of an animal, if we were talking about the chiyuv for the wall, it should just say a person breaks down somebody else's wall. So that leads the Rambam to say that actually what the Gemara is talking about, the chiyuv for the animal, for the animal's nizakim. And therefore the Rambam makes the distinction, which I mentioned yesterday, that it depends really what the person who broke down the wall, what was his intention. Now, obviously, yes, if it was a strong wall, you're going to be higher for the wall, and if it was a weak wall, you're going to be higher for the value of a weak wall. And if it was a wall that was about to collapse any moment, then, yeah, you wouldn't pay for the wall. That's according to the Rambam, the Gemara is not dealing with that issue, really, because that's a given. There's no chiddush in that. The chiddush is as far as the animal's nizikin. The Rambam doesn't talk about the animal itself running away, by the way, so maybe he holds that is grama no matter what. But as far as nizikin, the Rambam learns like this. If you broke open the wall, hello, with the intention that the animal should go out and cause hezek, then you will be chayev for that animal for the hezek that animal does, and that's the case that we're saying over here that the poet together with Nei Behemes Chaveroi that the Gemara is saying if the wall was a strong wall, then you should be chayev the dinei adam because you weren't a listim, you didn't do it in order to steal the animal, you did it in order that the animal should go out and cause damage, and the owner is going to be liable. You should instead be liable. And on the other hand, with the listim, the listim's purpose is to steal the animal. They're not breaking open the wall in order to let the animal go out and cause damage. Pashtus, they're opening it in order to steal the animal. Now, let's say then they break open the wall, but they don't end up stealing the animal for whatever reason. They get scared off, whatever it is exactly. They leave the wall broken down, but the animal is still there. Then that's the case where the Mishnah is saying that everybody is going to be potter because they didn't break down the wall intending for the animal to cause nezek, and therefore in that sense it would be grama.
So their intent breaking the wall is what governs whether or not they're chayav or not.
Whether they're chayav for the animal's nedikin, right. Again, it seems that the Rambam would hold that the animal itself running away would be a matter of grama, they'd be potter regardless. Again, unless they actually took it out, that's different. And as far as the wall itself, then it's just if it was a then you pay according to the value of the wall. There's no fitting.
When you see that the intent is
well, that's what that would be partly because what you were just saying. In the Mishnah, mentioned the listim, and in the price over here, it doesn't. Okay, so that's case number one. Case number two, Omamar, Hakoshes Kamosa Shachaber Bifnad Leva. We say that if somebody bends over somebody else's standing grain in the presence of a fire. So where is it? Hey, Chidami, what's the situation? Elaim de macula beruach mitzuya. Kama just means standing grain. It doesn't matter what type of grain. The point is that the pasuk mentions v'nechal godish ayakama yatzada. That a person lights a fire and it ends up spreading, and it spreads to somebody's kama, to somebody's standing grain. The person who lit the fire is chayev. Now in this case, the Rashi actually makes a point of mentioning that that the fire was set by somebody else. Reuven lit a fire in his chotzer. It's approaching Shimon's field. Meanwhile, Levi comes and bends over the stalks of grain to bring him closer to the fire, which gets into Mephoshim talk about the possibility. Does it actually mean to imply that the rule would be different if Reuven himself had lit the fire and also bent over the grain? Anyway, so the question is, not pours gasoline. Listen, the point is like this. Suppose the Gemara is asking, if we're talking about that, are we talking about that the situation is that with the grain, if the grain had just been standing straight, the fire wouldn't have reached it. You bent it over, you brought it closer, and therefore the fire is able to catch on to it. Well, then, b'dinei adam nami nechayev, and of course you're chayev b'dinei adam. Tosfos has a bit of discussion about that. It amounts to the same thing, whether you bring the flammable object closer to the fire, or you bring the fire closer to the flammable object. Either way, you're chayev. Ela demati b'ruach she'enim. So you know what we're talking about over here is that you do bend over the grain, so it's closer to the fire. However, the conditions are that with a ruach mitzuyah, with a normal wind, the fire still wouldn't reach it. However, all of a sudden, a ruach she'ena metzuyah could whip up and it would reach it. So you put them in dine adam because you could argue, I didn't know a strong wind was going to come all of a sudden, but you chayev in dine shemayim because you should have been more careful. You should have taken into consideration the possibility that there'd be a ruach she'ena metzuyah and the guy's grain is going to be ignited. That's one explanation. As when the Braisa says that's one explanation of what we mean. That you possibly didn't know them because it was a situation where under ordinary circumstances the fire wouldn't have reached there, but under unusual circumstances, the Ruach Shein and Matsuyah, it could. The Ramban, by the way, has a long discussion about this whole sugya over here, how it relates to the dinim of Grama versus Garmi. We talked about before that Grama benizikin is potter, but dinim of Garmi is machloikas later on in Amasefta, and the halacha is like a mayor that you hire for dinim of Garmi. So the Ramban spends a lot of time discussing the distinction between them, and also and therefore how that relates to our Gemara over here. He says one thing is that in our case over here, The reason why specifically we're saying he's potter, I mean, on the face of it, you know, ultimately if the fire was going to reach there, why are we pottering him? The reason is, he says, because the fact is, at the time that you bent over the grain, the person who set the fire was not yet hired for the burning of it yet, because it hadn't reached there yet. So therefore, again, if it'll come there with ruach metzuyah, then that's directly bringing the thing to the fire. Therefore, you're chayav. But if it's, the situation is that it's ruach she'ena metzuyah, and you did it before the person who lit the fire ever became chayav for the burning of this grain because it was nowhere near there yet, that's why the Gemara is saying you're potter.
So before the ruach came and bent
the grain,
there was no flame. It was not burning yet.
Actually, you know what? I think the Ramban's distinction actually really belongs to the next thing about Tomon. So, but either way, I think it's the point is that he makes that distinction. Again, if we said Dinah de Garmi would be chayev, but you have to draw a distinction between Garmi, which is a more direct thing. Garmi is where you do something that is pretty much inevitably going to lead to this result, whereas Grama is less direct like that. Rav Ashi gives another explanation. Tomun itmar. What we're talking about when we say the person bent over the other person's grain, what we mean is bent it over in the sense like he covered it with something. Or other mafarshim say that tomun means that you cover the object with something and later on it gets ruined. We're going to learn later on in the parak when we deal with all the dinim of Eish. We talked about briefly before in the Masechta that you potter by tomun in Eish from there is Akosu. So in this case, what the person did is, let's say he spread a blanket or something over the standing grain. Now it's tumult. Now the fire reaches it. So like this, he didn't contribute to the fire burning it. Let's say we're not even talking about ruach metzuyah or she'ena metzuyah. Let's say the fire was going to reach there with a ruach metzuyah. However, without him covering it, the owner of the field would have been entitled to compensation for his grain. Now he's not, because it's tumult. Mishum d'shavi, tumult b'esh. He made it tumult in fire, where now the person who set the fire is potter. So now, on the other hand, though, it still is grama, because he didn't light the fire himself. All he did is he covered the grain.
How did he
He covered it with a blanket, let's say, whatever.
He covered it with a blanket, so how did the fire propagate itself?
Yeah, I think a fire can burn through a blanket.
So what difference does it make if there's a blanket or not?
Because that's the point, because the Torah tells us that you potter by tumah, and that you potter for things that are covered up. When the pasuk mentions godish or yakama, they had a stack of grain or standing grain, and we learn, as we'll learn later on in the parak, that that means only things that are visible. Anything that's hidden, you're potter from, with certain exceptions. We'll learn later in the parak or whatever. So in this case, the person did a grama. He caused there would be a situation where the person who set the fire is not going to end up paying for this grain. The other mepharshim will explain slightly differently that tamun over here means that he hid something among the stalks of grain. And that thing got burned. Same difference there. Anyway, the point is that he could use the argument while I was trying to save the things, but you know the Eved knows the truth, and therefore he's chayvid in Shemayim.
Did he need an intent to make him?
No. Okay. Next, Omar Hasoicha Eidus Sheker. The third item on the list was somebody who hires false aid. Here's a dummy. Are we talking about that he hired false Edim to testify on his own behalf and based in that he's going to be able to collect money illegally from somebody else? What do you mean? What do you mean? He is Chayyab Adam. Whatever money he collected from that guy, he's going to have to repay. No, so we're talking about that he hired these false witnesses to testify on behalf of somebody else. And now, Tosfos adds the detail that it has to be that somebody else either doesn't have money to pay back, otherwise, after all, he ended up benefiting from it, he should have to pay back the guy it was taken away from, or another case, so either he doesn't have money to pay, or it could be he went off to Medinat Hayam and he's not available. Tosfos also draws an interesting distinction, which is that all this only applies if the person hired the false witnesses, then we make him chayav b'din Shemayim. And again, Chayav b'din Hashemayim, we said before,
with
Chayav in Hashem's judgment. And again, that raises the possibility maybe he does have to reimburse maybe he is required to reimburse, whatever. Tosfos actually says that if he just verbally tells them to be made Eidus Sheker, then he's not even Chayav b'din Hashemayim, because then, as the Gemara is going to say soon, he can figure Divir Rabba, Divir Atama, Divir Meshomen. Why should I assume they'll listen to me? Well, Mela, if there's money involved, yeah, people will do things for money, but if I just tell them verbally. No, but Shoshim can't be Aiden.
Asotha
means he hires them. What? And that's what the Gemara is going to bring up soon. But the point is, if he hires them, though, then at least it's true, technically, he could argue, pay them. If he hired them and paid them, he could, in theory, get away with the argument that Divrei Rabba, Divrei Talmud, and they're in Shliach Bar Aveda, etc. Nevertheless, he'll be chayav b'din Shemayim. But that's what Tosfos says, only if he hired them. Other Rishonim, I think the Rashba and others, learn differently. They say that, no, it doesn't mean Dafka he hired them. The Gemara is just mentioning the typical case. Typically, people are not going to be willing to say false aidas for free. But yes, the same thing they say would apply if he convinced them to do it. Next, the fourth case was somebody knows Eidos on behalf of somebody else and he doesn't come to Beis Din to testify. So again, Maya Skinnin, what are we talking about? I don't know, by the way, why it is that the previous ones, the Gemara asked Hefi Domi and he would ask Maya Skinnin. Okay. Anyway, Elaim of Beis Shei, are we talking about that there's two Eidim involved over here, or there's two Eidim available, let's say, and one or both of them don't want to come to Beis Din? Pshita, of course they're chayav b'din Shemayim. Dar'aisahu. So there's an Isser Dar'aisah involved, because the pasuk says, Im lo yagid v'nof sa'avayim. If a person does not, the Torah says over there, if a person does not give Eidus, the refuses to have, then that he'll bear his guilt. Now, Tosfos brings up the point that technically that
door again
doesn't matter. Technically, Tosfos said that din only applies if the Baal Dover, if the person who's involved in the din Torah, comes to him and says, I want you to testify on my behalf, and the person swears falsely that he doesn't know any Eidus. Later on, when he wants to do tshuva, then the pasuk describes over there the korban that he has to bring, korban ol v'yored. So technically, this doesn't apply if there was no shavua. Nevertheless, though, the Gemara is still assuming that there is a serious avera involved. And in fact, the Shilta says an interesting thing. The Shilta says, if you look at the pasuk starts off by saying that the nefesh kisach, so if a person sins, And only then, afterwards, it mentioned b'shama chol Allah, that he hears somebody trying to make him swear, you know Edus from me, come to Beis Din, and then the guy says, I swear I don't know Edus, or whatever. Or if you don't know Edus, then swear that that's true, and he says yes, or whatever, as we'll learn in Masechta Shavuos in a year and a half from now, Be'ez Hashem. But even before that, the Shilta says, you still have, just by refusing to come, even without a Shavuos, you still have a Nefesh Kisesta. There's still an Aveira has been committed. And therefore, of course, you're chayiv in the Shabbat. So no, what we're talking about over here is not two Edim, there's only one Edim involved over here. Now we know the general rule, any case where two Edim would be enough to cause one person to pay another, one Edim is enough, if you have one Edim for a claim, is enough to make the other guy swear a shvuah. So what's happening over here then? So if you had come to Beis Din and testified, you might have gotten the guy to scared enough that you might have scared the guy enough, or he's going to have to swear, it's a pretty serious thing, that he would have said, you know what, fine, I admit and I'll pay. Like this, you're depriving the person, the plaintiff, of being able to collect whatever he was. But on the other hand, the fact is, he wasn't definitely going to be able to. After all, the guy could have sworn. So therefore, you only chayav b'din shamayim. With that, by the way, there is, by the way, a Gemara in Pesachim that mentions that even if the Gemara says that there's three kinds of people with Eidus to hate, and one of them is somebody who knows Eidus for somebody else and doesn't testify. So even if it's not a case of Shavua, even whatever, there's still an obligation, there's still a moral obligation to go. The Gemara says, so you're telling me there are only four cases, these four that we just listed, where you're possibly in the Anam Achai B'din Shemayim? But we have a bunch of others, and the simon for them is ha'oseh b'sam or shliach chaver nishbar. Each of these is a key word for five cases that we're going to mention. Number one, ha'oseh malacha b'mecha. Just if somebody does work with the water of the chatas, meaning the paradrumal water, and Rashi gives the example that let's say you use them for weighing. As we learned in Gittin in the Sogia of Nezachena of the Hezachena Nicker, that passes it to be used as paradrumal water. If you use the water for some malacha.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So we talked about it. At some point. So you do water with the mechata, so a parah schata, so you do malacha, or you do malacha with the actual parah itself. There's nothing visible on it. Here it's not a matter of grama, by the way. Here it's a matter of, we learned over there, it's hezek sheni nikar, where the halacha is a hezek sheni nikar, lo shmei hezek. Actually, you put a yoke on it, for example, yeah, or whatever, yeah, yeah. Or in this case, you did malacha with the water, as in the example that Rashi gives over here, that you used the water on one. You needed to weigh something, so you put a container of the water on one side of the scale, and you put the other thing on the other side of the scale. Actually, we talked about in Gittin. Actually, we said that no, the meaning might be that you actually weigh something in the water by dropping something into the water to see how much the water level rises to see the volume of it. Whatever the point is, that it has a chain in nigger. There's no visible difference in the water or in the para, yet it's possible. And therefore, you chayiv b'din shamayim. So there's another example, ultimate did on chayiv b'din shamayim. And number two, Raika, what about, we learned earlier in the Masechta, a few days ago, we had, if somebody puts poison in front of somebody else's animal, also ultimate did on chayiv b'din shamayim. And number three, Barika Ashaleach, we had all this also earlier in the Masechta. Ashaleach at a beira biat chereshoy to the cotton. If somebody sends a fire in the hands of a chereshoy to the cotton, it'll be later on in our parak as well. Also, potamin yonan mechayvin mishamayim, because it's basically an ain shliach to bad beira situation. If you send it with the keach, then the keach is higher. If you send it with a chereshoy to the cotton, you can't be responsible because you didn't set the fire yourself. But they can't be responsible because they're not b'nei das. We learned when we talk about it earlier in the Masechta, we talk about the pros and cons. Are we talking about he gave them a live coal? Are we talking about he gave them an actual open flame, etc.? Anyway, the point is, there is a case where Papa Medinon Mechayim Mishmaim. And number four, where he got Mavet as Chaveri, you have another case. If somebody scares somebody else, the Rashi gives an example, like he goes and all of a sudden comes up behind him and yells into his ear and scares him. And let's say then, I don't know, the guy, let's say, falls down and hurts himself or something. Also, Potem and Dinan Mechayiv B'din Shamayim. Here Rashi says that the thing is, but he didn't do a maise in his guf. He didn't directly touch him or anything. In Kedushin, we looked at some Kedushin also, and Rashi there gave a different explanation. The person who, the victim has very certain degree of responsibility. Also, the fact that he allowed himself to get startled like that and fall down or whatever it is and hurt himself.
Didn't we say when a behemoth startles and someone is in fit?
Fine, a behemoth doesn't have that, the person does.
Yeah, but it's startled. You don't need startled.
Yeah, the person still is able to control themselves. But anyway, it's also possible to do not have a mind. Okay, Mepharshim should do draw a distinction between, we learned this in tradition, whether the victim was able to get away or not. So, you know, the case actually we had over there, I think, was the person yelled at the other guy and made him dead. So the guy had moved his head away in time to avoid it or not. If he couldn't, that's different. Yeah.
As long as he could.
Yes. And number five, we have a case from earlier in our Masechta. Nishbara kadeh v'shos adam v'loy silker. If somebody's jug broken Rosh Hashanah Adam and he didn't take away the broken pieces, or Nafla Gmala Gleit HaMeder, or a camel fell down and he didn't pick it back up. So there's a burr Rosh Hashanah Adam, but it can't be, it's not the kind of burr that he'd be chayav for, well, never mind nothing 10 bachim, you'd be chayav for nezek for it. So Remeir v'chayav v'hezek, and Remeir says you're chayav for any nezek falls by it, v'chamem potem adonam v'chayav v'nei shemayim. Because you didn't deliberately create that burr. You tripped and then and your jug broke or your camel fell down or whatever on its own. Yeah, it would be nice to get it out of the way, but it's different if you had put it down there like a filler, then you have no right to be masked it. But we talk about over there that you were masked here the pieces or the carcass or what have you.
You tripped and you broke your
jug. You were masked here the pieces afterwards, let's say.
Right.
So we said somebody fell on it, according to the Chachamim, you put them in the bottom because you didn't deliberately create the spur. Therefore, you have the right to be masked here the pieces, and therefore you're only high within the Shemayim. What?
It's grama.
No, it's not so much grama. It's not so much grama, but it's a burr that you're not responsible for. You didn't deliberately set out to create this burr. Okay.
That's the point.
Okay, that's not really grama, whatever. Okay. It's a din in burr. Anyway. Okay, so you have five other cases. So why did Rabbi Yeshua mention only the four? The answer is in Mia Ikaturva. You're right. As a matter of fact, there are a lot of different cases where Potam and Dinanam Chayvin and Shemaim. There may even be more besides these five. Mahani Trichale. No, it's rather when it comes to these four that we listed in the original Braisa, there was a chidush in each one of them that we had to mention then. Otherwise, we would have thought in each of those cases, you could argue maybe he's Potter even Medina Shemai. Why? Let's go through them. Because you would think in each one of them, you could argue that maybe there's a reason to not even Mechayev him in Dinah Shemai. Namely as follows. So there's a Kamash Malan, and therefore Rabbi Yeshua, when Rabbi Yeshua said Abad Dvarim, the Chiddush wasn't Abad Dvarim as opposed to there's no other case. The stress in his statement is Abad Dvarim are higher than Dinah Shemai. As opposed to other cases where, yeah, of course, there's other cases where you're chayav in Shemayim, but there's no chiddush in them. These four, you should know you're also chayav in Shemayim, even though you would have a logical argument in each one to say that maybe not. Why? Let's go through them. Aperis geder b'fnei behemes chaver, the first case where somebody broke open a wall and somebody else's animal got out. Ma'ud tamer, so you could argue. Again, remember we said at the top of the Amud, the coast of Ra'ura, that it has to be talking about that it was a shaky wall anyway, because otherwise if it was a strong wall, then you ought to be chayev for paying for the wall, according to Rashi and Tosfos, or according to the Rambam, you should be chayev because you obviously meant to make the animal go out and cause damage.
And that could have removed the initial.
No, wait. But the point is, since it's a weak wall, given the mystery, since after all, such a wall is going to soon be torn down, ma'avid, you could argue, well, what did I do wrong? I just tore down a wall, which anyway was gonna fall down or be pulled down soon. The Din of Shemayim, Namalei L'Chayev. So the person should be able to argue, I shouldn't even be Chayev the Din of Shemayim.
Actually, you could have said the other way around. You could have said the wall was fragile, could have hit somebody, so I'm taking him down.
But maybe that also, whatever. No, because it's not that, because we could be talking about the wall is nowhere near where people are, nowhere near foot traffic or whatever. So maybe you can't get away with that argument, but at least you could say you knew that it was going to fall down or that you were going to have to tear it down soon. So what are you suing me for the value of it, or what are you or for the value of the animal or whatever? Or for the nezik of the animal, whatever. Kamash Malon, that is a chiddush. Nevertheless, you are chayav b'din Shemayim. Because the fact of the matter is, it wasn't your business to tear down that wall. Yeah, the guy is supposed to do it, but he let him do it on his own schedule. You don't yet. Okay. Next, a case of kamashas v'chaveir nami. What about the case of somebody who bends over somebody else's standing grain? why are we saying the chiddush is that we're saying chayv in shemaim? Because ma'ud tema. Because you might have thought to say lema. Let the guy be able to argue. Look, the Yadayna to Asir Ruach Sheni Matsuya. Was I supposed to know that all of a sudden a Ruach Sheni Matsuya is going to blow up? Or we didn't Shemaim Namagal the Chayef. So you shouldn't be Chayef in Shemaim either. Come on. In other words, the guy is saying, I knew there was a fire next door. But under normal circumstances, with a Ruach Matsuya, that fire never would have spread over here. I bent down the guy's brain. All of a sudden, a hurricane came through, a Ruach Sheni Matsuya came through and spread the fire over there and it started burning. I didn't know when I did that that was going to happen. So you would think maybe he should even be potter from Dinah Shemayim. Kamash Malan, that's the chiddush that we don't say that. Because after all, you had an obligation to be careful. You should have taken into consideration the possibility that there would be that strong wind. What about a little of Ashi? Dhamma, Nami, Tomun,
if it was a strong wind, done the same thing without him bending the sword.
Not necessarily. Those couple of feet could have made the difference. We have to be talking about, obviously, a case where it made the difference. What about
strong wind and it's just a couple of feet?
I don't know. It depends on the strength of the wind. It depends on, you also have to consider what kind of plants are we talking about. You know, are we talking about like wheat or barley, which are stalks a couple of feet high, or are we talking about like corn or something, which, you know, grows 10 feet high or something? It makes a difference, you know. Whatever, the principle is the same. What about a little of Ashi, Nami Tomun Utmai? What about a coincidence of Ashi's explanation that we said that the case of Kofa Kamasa Shachavera had nothing to do with strong or regular wind, but rather with that he covered up the grain, or he hid something inside the grain? What's the reason to say that he would have thought he fought him in Shemayim? Because Ma'ud Tema, I'm not Kasuya Kasiti Ne'alah. He could argue, okay, I covered it for you. I was trying to do you a favor that it shouldn't burn so quickly. Maybe you shouldn't be chayiv in Shemayim either. Kamash Malon, that's the chiddush, we don't say that. First of all, the Eibishter knows the truth. And second of all, even if you genuinely did mean to, Mephoshim say, even if you genuinely did mean to slow the fire, you should have also taken into consideration that, on the other hand, it's going to lead to Tamun, and then the possibility that it'll lead to a situation of Tamun, and the guy will lose everything.
For the vent store, we don't make any difference whether it's summer, it's very dry.
No, obviously we do. We have to consider the conditions. Obviously, yeah. The third case, what about the case of somebody who hires false edim? The chiddush is, we're saying that the chiddush is that you chayv b'din shemayim, because otherwise we would have thought not. Actually, this is what I just said about, by the way, about that doesn't the Eibishter know, that but he should have been careful. That's actually from Tosfos. Okay, so Eidah Shekhar Nami, Mao de Tema, you would think, Lema, the guy should be able to argue, look, Divir Adava, Divir Teva, Tama, Divir Mishaymin, look, after all, you know, the Eidah tells you not to testify falsely. I, the Talmud, am telling you to testify falsely. Who are you supposed to listen to? Why is it my fault if you gave in and did that? Over Dinah Shemayim, Namalei L'chayim, so maybe you should be positive from Dinah Shemayim as well. Kamash Malon, that is the Chiddush that we don't say that.
That's a good one.
That's the chiddush that we don't say that. According to Tosfos, when he hired them, and according to the Rashba, even if he didn't hire them, even if he verbally told them, we still make them chayiv b'din shemayim.
Because, in the case of the Yomassi, another desire, we make the Yomassi.
You know what? Rabbi Yonasan Eibershitz said an interesting thing about that, which actually connects with this week's parasha. You know, we know the famous being Ein Toyin and Mamesis. If a person Mamesis, the person tries to convince somebody else to worship Avodah Zarah, If regardless whether the person he talked to gets convinced or not, the Mesis is still Chayiv Mitzvah. Now, why can't he argue Divrei Rav, Divrei Talmid? So Rabbi Yonasan writes, because Divrei Rav, Divrei Talmid applies to any other Aveda. Yes, you're still acknowledging that there is a Rav and that you're the Talmid. So therefore, you can say, okay, well, why should I listen to you, the Talmid? I'm supposed to listen to the Eibishter. A Mesis, the whole point is, he's trying to tell you there is no Rav. Replace the Rav, replace the Eibishter, have your whole with something else. Therefore, you don't have that argument. And he says, that's in this week's parasha, at the beginning of the parasha, we have the Eibishter tells Moshe Rabbeinu to go and fight against the Tzoreres and Minyanim, go consider the Minyanim as enemies and fight against them. Why? It's because of two things. Because they got you involved in Pa'ur, and because they got you involved in Nus. So why the focus on Pa'ur? Because that answers the question. If it was just Nus, the Minyanim should say, Divrei Adav, Divrei Talmid, Divrei Mishnah. Who says you have to give in to all women? But because there was also Pa'ur involved, because there was also a Mesis, they have no such excuse, so get out.
Who says that?
The Rabbi Yonasan Eibershitz. Case number four. He said, if somebody knows an edus that would help somebody else and doesn't give that edus, nami, it's also, we have to say that the chiddush is that he's chayav b'din shamayim. Why? Because maudetema, because you should think, he could argue, look, mi yemer de chiyava asinim asadin yulay have a moida. Okay, but after all, who says that if I had come and given the edus, this other guy would have been scared to swear falsely and he would have admitted and paid? Don't have a mishtab l'shikra. After all, he might have sworn falsely. Or within a shemayim namalei l'chayev, so I shouldn't be chayev within a shemayim either. Kamash malon, nevertheless, he is. And actually, I think Pnei Yeshua points out that, you know, when you get down to it, the person should be able to further argue, yes, but after all, the Eivishtin knows the truth, whether he was going to be, whether he was going to end up, whether that other person would have ended up swearing falsely or not. Why should I be chayev within a shemayim? The answer is yes, the Eivishtin knows, but you didn't know. You intended to suppress your Eidus, to suppress your Eidus, to not give Eidus, and therefore to cause the other guy a hezek. You don't have the excuse that the Eidushin knows what would have happened, what would have developed anyway.
In all these cases, can we say that it makes sure?
What? The Pnei Yeshua said it makes sure?
Yeah.
No, not really. Maybe in the case of the hiring the age of the age of Shekhar, yeah, maybe you could argue it's the Pnei Yeshua.
Therefore, how can we argue in the other way around that he would have been hired?
Because again, especially if we say that hired in Yishamayim means there's actual financial compensation involved, anything short of that, there may be an Aver, there may be the Ne'iver, there may be one or another, there may be Rumbashek, the Tirchak, etc., but that's not the same thing as saying Chayev Adir Shemayim, which means that there's actual financial obligations involved. The Mishnah said, Nifritza Belaila Ishapritzu Abistim Kula, that if the wall or gate was broken open at night, or if robbers broke it open, so we said the owner is Potter. And we discussed yesterday what Tosfos said. Does it mean that if it happened by day he would have been chayev and only by night he's potter because he couldn't, or by night he's potter because he didn't hear about it, or is it he's potter by night anyway because we don't make him round him up in the middle of the night? Anyway, Amar Rabba b'hu shechosra. This only applies if the animal actually dug under, if the animal actually undermined the wall and undermined the wall and started digging under the wall and therefore the wall fell down. That's considered a night. The question is, that's what the Mishnah is saying. When the Mishnah is saying, Nifritza Belaila, your potter, means that the animal actually undermined, the wall didn't just fall down on its own, the animal actually dug underneath it and undermined it and caused it.
How is it related to Lila? You could have done it during the day.
Because during the day, you're expected to know what's going on around your barns. Wait, so the question is, so what, are you telling me then that if the animal didn't dig, if the wall just fell down on its own, you're chayev? Hey, dummy. Elam of a coastal body, or you're talking about a strong wall, Kila Chosra Mayachayev. Okay, so even if the animal didn't undermine it and all of a sudden it fell down unexpectedly, why should you be Chayev? My Havala Levin, what could you have done differently? You had a good strong wall over there, it would stand the Ruach Matsuya. And El of a coastal Ruah, you're going to say it's talking about a shaky wall, well then Ki Chosra Mayach Potter. So why are you telling me he's Potter if the animal undermined it? It's the pshia of a safer bonus. This is a case of you started out with pshia because you put the animal behind a shaky wall, behind a weak wall. Safer bonus because it ended up collapsing because the animal dug underneath it. Fine. That works according to the opinion we discussed this the other day, mainly in Rav Matthias, that if you started out with something that's pshia and it ended up that the damage was actually caused by an onus that you potter, okay, so that's what the Mishnah is telling you. According to that opinion, then the Mishnah fits very well. You should be chayev because of your original pshia for putting it behind a weak wall. So no, that doesn't work. So we can't say that that's what Rabba meant. Incidentally, by the way, Tosfos a few blocks ago makes the point, why are we got to mentioning that the animal undermine the wall and cause it to collapse? Why don't we just say very simply, the animal dug its way out. The wall still stayed standing, but the animal dug its way out. The answer is, there's two different things. Dug its way out, meaning it dug a tunnel, the wall still remains standing, but it dug a tunnel under the wall and managed to get out. Undermine the wall means that the wall actually fell down. Tosfos says the distinction is because when we say chilot of the pshia b'soif of onus, when we talk about the concept, we started out doing something pshia, but it ended up, it was caused, the actual damage was caused by an onus, it has to be there's some relationship between the pshia and the onus. If the animal just dug a tunnel underneath, regardless whether it's a weak wall or a strong wall, the Pshia and the Oynes have nothing to do with each other. The Pshia is a weak wall.
You could have shaken the wall during...
No, but that doesn't matter. The fact is, the wall is still standing afterwards. You have now a tunnel underneath that the animal get out. Even according to the opinion that Yechayev, by Tulas and Pshia, besides the Oynes, would not be Mechayev. It would not be Mechayev in a case like that. That is why Rashi had to make the point to say that we're talking about the animal actually, and the Gemara is saying, by implication, that the animal actually undermined the wall and caused it to collapse. There would be a difference whether it's a strong wall or a weak wall. No, you have to say that our Mishnah is talking about a strong wall. So therefore, the Mishnah is telling us, even if the animal did not dig its way out, even if the wall just collapsed, the wall collapsed on itself. Rather, statement that he made a distinction between whether the animal undermined the wall or not is actually referring to the Sefer, to the next part of the Mishnah. Where the Mishnah continued, if you left the animal in the sun, or you gave it over to a cheresh shoyt b'karmen to watch, the yotzav izika, and it goes out and causes the hezek, chayev, on that, omer rabba v'afilu chosra. So on that, Rabba says that this is true, you chayev, even if the animal dug its way out. Namely, needless to say, if the animal didn't dig its way out, you put it in the sun, and it ended up just getting out because the door wasn't strong enough, then of course you chayev to kol b'pshia. That whole thing, because that whole thing is pshia by leaving it in the sun behind an inadequate door. But even if the animal only got out by digging under the wall and making it collapse, you would think, so you would think maybe it's a case of chilasa of shiva seva bonus, and therefore, according to the opinion that potter, you should be potter in this case. No, the kamash malon to kula pshia. No, the chiddush is that the whole thing is considered pshia. You can't even consider it seva bonus in this case. The fact that the animal dug underneath the wall. My time, why is that to Amalei? Because you can tell this owner made the yadis. Look, you knew full well, given the shvak to Bachama, that since you left the animal in the sun and it was uncomfortable, kol tactical de isla lameva, any tactical, Rashi translates it bullet, it's like any method. It's related to the word tzedek, like any excuse, sort of, any way that it could, de isla lameva, that it would be able to, abdav nafka, will do and get out of it. So therefore, yes, the fact that you left it in the sun, even if it was a strong wall, but if a tunnel under that wall and it collapsed, and then the animal got out, you still are going to be chayev because you had no business leaving it in the sun in the first place. And therefore, you can't even really consider it sofer b'oynes because you have to expect that an animal is going to do whatever it can to get out in a case like that. Mishnah said, "Hayiru listim chayavim."
You had left it in the sun and gave provided with food and water.
Doesn't matter, or the sun still was uncomfortable, correct? I mentioned before, Tosfos asked that question about that's talking only in a case of Shavuot. So yeah, Tosfos leaves it. Tosfos explains that if there was a Shavua, then you're chayev a korban. But even without a Shavua, you're still chayev an aveira. And I mentioned what the Shilpas says, that the very fact that the pasuk begins when nefesh keeps after implies that there's an aveira independent of the Shavua.
Why?
Because the Torah wants that when the Torah wants that when you know ages that'll benefit somebody else, you should go and say it. But if he asks you, I mean, it's better if he should ask you for it, but even if not. He doesn't have Aveira. Implying that it's an Aveira, it's not true. One of the we're showing about, I remember now, which one talks about the idea, I think the Ramban talks about it, that it's a Gemilas Chesed to go and say it just to benefit somebody else.
In the case of the person's entirely being Shemar.
That's what we said. We said at the very beginning, before you got here, that it includes the idea that, first of all, if he wants to be forgiven by the Eibishter, he's going to have to compensate the guy. It may include that, according to some opinions, that if the Nizik grabs a hold of the chosim that belongs to the Mazik, he'll be able to keep them in payment of it. It may include that Basin can make an announcement, if embarrassing him in public, that he's not paying up, whatever. Mishnah said, "Hayiru listim chayavim." That if the listim took out the animal, then the listim are chayav for it, as opposed to just opening the gate, breaking the gate. Yeah. Question is pshita. Well, of course, kiven d'apkur kaimalaber shasayu. Well, of course, once the listim took out the animal, it now apkur means taking it out. There's meshicha kaimalaber shasayu. Now becomes in the rishus. Okay, not literally. I mean, meshicha. We learned the other day. We said that the meshicha really requires the person to say leish meshayach kni. It requires that the owner tells them to do meshicha. Nevertheless, since meshicha in and of itself is a valid method of kinyan, then in this case, it at least creates enough of a kinyan for them to be chayav for the animal's nizik. Tosfos discusses over here, first of all, that the Yerushalmi talks about the idea, the Yerushalmi draws a distinction between, are they stealing the animal in order to keep it, or are they stealing, or are they just opening the door, are they opening the door in order to steal the animal, or are they just opening it in order for it to just go and get lost, or killed, or whatever. This that we're saying, that time of the Shosai, is where they're trying to steal it.
Otherwise
they'd be possible. Otherwise it would be similar. That sort of goes together with the Rambam distinction from before of what the of what their intention was when they broke it open. No, the point is even without Yush, it's still under their
they don't even know about it.
Well, there's that too. But the point is, even before Yush, that's the thing, even before Yush, it's not they haven't been koine it, but nevertheless they haven't been fully koine it, but nevertheless it is in near Rishus in the sense that now they're gonna be chayev for anything that it does. Tosfos discusses a little bit are we talking about that only they're responsible for any damages that it causes, or are we also talking about that they're responsible for anything that happens to it itself?
All this, they will be responsible even during the day, obviously.
So kaimel of reshusai l'chol mili. It should be in near reshus for all purposes. Of course, they should be chayev for any nizikin that it causes. Or for the nizikin to it itself, as the case may be.
We cannot say that none of them are really responsible.
No, because even if all of them did it together, so fine, they're all going to be chayav in partnership.
So you came and took the name as out.
Yeah.
So why should the bottom be...
That's what we're saying, the listim are chayav. That's what we said, yeah. That's the question. Pshita, kiven d'apkur, once they took out the animal, kaimala, v'rishusayu, it's now considered in the rishus l'chol mili for all purposes. Of course, they're chayav for any nizikin that causes. And the answer is, the Mishnah only needed to say the case in the connect. The Mishnah only needed to say this din in the case the kamula ba'afa, where they stood in. They stood in its presence. In other words, hotziu listim doesn't literally have to mean that they took it out. It means they surrounded it in every other direction. The only way that it can go is out to go and then and graze in somebody's field or whatever. They didn't pull it.
Had they not done that,
then that's what we're saying. So again, remember, the Mishnah had said that Chatzua listim, then everybody's potter. Because the Baal Bas is potter because he didn't know, and the listim are potter because it was only grown. We're saying Chatzua listim, if they take it out, then they're chayav. Now, if they take it out, meaning that they literally schlep it out of there, of course they're chayav. They did Meshicha. The point is, even if Kamulah Ba'apa, so they didn't do any Meshicha on it, nevertheless, because they prevented it, they grounded it and prevented it from going in any other direction except the direction they wanted, that's enough to make them chayav. That's the point of the Mishnah. The Amar Rav about Amar of Masna Amar Rav, Hamavid Behemoth Chavera or Kamas Chavera, if somebody stands somebody else's animal by somebody else's grain. So Reuven takes Shimon's animal and stands it in Levi's field to eat the grain. Chayev. So by the same token over here, these listim are chayev for basically forcing the animal to go and to go and graze in somebody else's field and cause nezek. Okay. Question is Mamed Pshita. Well, of course, if he literally makes it stand there, which means Mamed would literally mean he grabs a hold of the animal and then puts it down in the field. Of course, he's going to be chayev. And therefore, the same thing. That mamid behemoth chavera does not literally mean that he picks up the animal and puts it over there, but it means he forces it to go there by surrounding it from every other direction, so that that's the only way that it can go. And Rabba is saying that makes you chayev. Even without touching. So by the same token, in our Mishnah, your listing means the same kind of thing. Amalei Abaye l'Rav Yosef. So now Abaye says to Rav Yosef, actually, he kisha Amr Flanim. you told us an answer. We know throughout Shas, in many places, we find that when Rabbi Yosef later in life became sick and forgot a lot of his learning, the Abaya used to have to remind him a lot of times of what he had taught them before he got sick. So you told us that the case is hikisha. That's the word for hitting. It's one of the words for hitting an animal in Gemara Lashon. That the case is hikisha. The case of Mamed Behemoth Chaveda, the case that Rabbi was talking about, does not necessarily only have to be where he surrounded the animal and prevented it from going any place else. It can also be that he hit the animal with a stick and made it move.
And that's the case that was
presented by Rabbi Yosef. That Rabbi Yosef explains Rabbi's statement as being like that. Therefore, the list of Namid he kashur. Therefore, in our Mishnah, also the case can be not necessarily that the listim literally did meshicha on the animal by pulling it. Of course, then they'd be chayev. The case would be that he kisha, that if they hit it with a stick, that's enough to make them chayev already, even without actually pulling it by the halter or whatever.
Spurs or something else.
But yes. Now, does that mean, by the way, so the Ravid learns that means one or the other? That you're chayev even if you stand all around it. How much more so if he kisha? According to the Rabbah's way of understanding it, Rabbi Yosef is saying not only needless to say he kisha. I'm agreeing with Rabbah that kamla ba'afa you'd be chayev.
Why do we need this case? Because if it's enough just to surround an animal and showing the way to go up, for sure, if you beat him...
That's the point. That's
what's the point?
That's the point. The Ravid is saying that the Rabbi Yosef is adding... No, but because...
Wouldn't you have deduced that?
No, you wouldn't. You wouldn't necessarily have deduced it. You told us the case of Ikisha. Once we have, putting that together with what Rabbi said, we have that it works in either case. And anyway, I was going to say that there were other Rishonim who learned that, no, that Rabbi Yosef is actually disagreeing with Rabbi. Standing around the animal would not be enough to make you chayev. Right. Only right. Hitting it would right. Make you chayev, and of course, leading it by its way.
Right. Yeah.
Okay.
Who are these?
I don't remember which. I don't remember which other ones there are. What? You like the opinion of the Rishonim? Okay. Next. The Mishnah said Masra L'Roya, that if you give the animal over to a shepherd to watch, Nichnas L'Roya Chula, we say the shepherd comes in instead of you, the shepherd is now chayev for the animal. Amri, Tacht of the Mam. So they ask, what do you mean the shepherd comes instead of him? Instead of who? Yilema Tacht of the Baal Behema. Do you mean that the shepherd takes the position of the owner of the animal, meaning instead of the owner being chayev for any nizikin that the animal causes from now on the shepherd is? Fine, that is true, but Tanena Chada Zimna, but we already learned that earlier in the Masechta. We learned in the fourth parak that if you give an animal to any of the four shomrim, all of them go in and they replace the owner. So the Mishnah didn't have to mention that again over here. Ella. For this purpose, yes. We discussed over there. Actually, are there cases where one or the other of them might be higher more than the others? Maybe a shoyl after all has a higher level of responsibility. But insofar as it, so we said over there, if you did shmirah kosa, if you're a shomer chinam, you'll be potter if you're any of the other shomer, meaning shmirah mula. But the point still remains. There is a basic concept that you can have somebody else replace you in chiyuv for nizikin. Our Mishnah mentioning the roya doesn't really add to that. Yeah. Ella Tacht of the Shomer. So you're going to tell me, so evidently what it means is that the Roya comes in place of the Shomer. So in other words, we have to be talking about, let's say, so Reuven owns an animal. There's three people involved. Reuven owns an animal. He gives it to Shimon, the Shomer, and he said that Shimon is now chayev for anything that Reuven would have been chayev for. The Shomer now gives it to Levi, the Roya.
So how can he do that?
That's the problem. Shomer kama iftele legamre. It sounds like then the first Shomer becomes completely potter. By the way, what are we talking about as far as potter? There is the Marshal and the Pnei Yeshua and a number of other Achronim discuss and argue over the question, are we talking about over here the responsibility of the Shomer or the shepherd for the actual animal itself, for anything that might happen to the animal itself, or are we talking about the responsibility for the Nizikin that the animal might cause? Well, not necessarily, because what the Gemara is going to discuss here, the concept of Shomer, Shemasa, Shomer, on the face of it, only applies to the welfare of the animal itself, not necessarily to Nezikin.
Without the approval of the Baal, how can this guy apply just to the welfare of the animal?
That's the point. It definitely applies to the welfare of the animal. But it does. Can it also apply to Nizakim? On the face of it, on the because let's learn the Gemara, then we'll see. Okay. The problem is Lema Tevi Tirta Dirava. In that case, can we say that we then, if we're understanding the Mishnah that way, that you have three parties involved, the original owner, the shomer, and the shepherd, then this becomes a skira to Rava. The Amar Rava. If we understand the Mishnah that there are three parties involved, then it becomes a skira to Rava's din. The Amar Rava, shomer, shemosel, shomer, chayim. Because Rava says that if one shomer gives the animal or the object or whatever to another shomer, he's chayim.
Who is chayim?
The original shomer. Now, in other words, like this. Let's say you have, for example, a shomer chinam. We know a shomer chinam is basically potter for anything that happens except for negligence, except for pshia. But Rava says if he gives it over to another shomer, even if that other shomer is a shomer sachar, who has a higher level of responsibility, the shomer chinam is still chayav for anything that happens to the animal, even oinus. Why? Because Rava says there, the Gemara discusses in Bava Metzia, Rava argues over there because the original owner can argue, you know what, I know, and therefore I trust you to swear when what happens, if a shomer chinam, if the animal gets lost or killed or what have you, the shomer has to come to Beis Din and swear that that's what happened, and then he's potter from paying. So the original owner can say, I trust you with the shavua. I don't know that other guy, I don't trust him with the shavua. So you have to pay me. Afterwards, you can take that guy to Beis Din and see whether you're going to be entitled to reimbursement from him or not.
Even if he did trust the second shomer, the Baal never gave the first shomer a shlichus to allow him to transfer his shmir.
Okay, so we learned in Gittin that a person can say ein ritzoni she'eh b'kdoni b'yad acha. However, that in and of itself is not enough of a reason necessarily to make ein ritzoni she'eh b'kdoni b'yad acha. I don't want that my pekodin, that my object, should be in somebody else's hands. True. There is that valid point, and the Gemara brings that up in that Sugya and Bav Matthias. The Gemara and Bav Matthias brings up that point as well. Ultimately, though, that's not necessarily reason enough. That's reason, fine, that's a reason, that's a moral reason for the first shomer not to give it to the second shomer. That doesn't actually obligate him that if the animal was lost by an onus, for example, to make him actually chayav to pay for it, not necessarily. For that, you need Rava's reason. Now, our Mishnah seems to contradict that, because our Mishnah is saying, Nichnas Aroya Tachta, that the shepherd takes over the responsibility. Now, if we learn that we're talking about the welfare of the animal itself, which again is one way of understanding our Gemara. And that's the thing, because if we're talking about Nezikin over here, then you have the issue, how does Rava's reason apply over here? When it comes to Nezikin, there's no difference to the original Balabas, whether you're dealing with the first shomer or the second shomer. Either way, somebody is responsible to pay the nezik. Okay, that gets into a bit of discussion, but anyway. So our Mishnah is saying that the roya nichnas the roya tachta, at least as far as the animal's welfare itself, and therefore that's a sirat Rava. Amalach Rava, no. So Rava can answer you, my masri l'roya, because you know what? Our Mishnah, when it says he gave it to a shepherd, doesn't necessarily involve, it does involve three parties, but not necessarily a shomer and then a shepherd. Rather, the barzilit, it means that the shepherd gave the animal to one of his assistants, to one of his apprentices. Normal for a roya to give the animals that are in his care to his assistant, and therefore, just as the Gemara discusses over there in Bava Metzia in this connection, that just like when you give somebody a pekodin, when you give somebody something to watch for you as a shomer, you have to expect that he may give it to his family members to watch when he's not around. Same thing over here. When you give it to a roya, the point of the Mishnah, when the Mishnah says nosna roya nichnas roya pachto, and what it means is you gave the animal to the roya. The roya, in turn, has your implicit permission to give it to his assistants. Those assistants now will become chayav for anything that happens to the animal or for any nezik that the animal does.
But roya doesn't mean necessarily.
So the roya means not the shepherd in chief, but rather the assistant shepherd. Not just to the original owner, but that's another point. And that whole machlokas of the Marshal and Snei Yeshua that I was just mentioning, that affects the understanding of that also, right? Would the Barzila be swearing to the Roya, and then the Roya goes and then does a dintura with the owner, or does he directly swear to the owner? But here, again, we're not necessarily talking about swearing, per se. If we're talking Nezikin, then there's not necessarily any swearing involved. There's just payment for the Nezik. Okay, so that's one version of the discussion. Is we started out thinking that the Mishnah is a spirit to Rava, and we said because we can be talking about apprentice shepherds over here, then not necessarily. Ikadamri, another version of the argument of the discussion went like this. Midikatoni Moskul Roya, since the Mishnah specifically mentions that you gave the animal to a shepherd, And it does not say you just gave it to somebody else, unspecified, then it must mean that Roya must mean the apprentice shepherd, because we know it's normal for a shepherd to give the animal to an apprentice. Therefore, based on that, but if you gave it to somebody else, you would not say that in. If you look at it that way, then on the contrary, can you say that our Mishnah proves Rava's point? Because usually Rava says that if you give to another shomer, you chayev. Again, unless it's something where l'chatchila it's expected that the shomer is going to give it to another shomer, such as to his family, or in this case, a shepherd giving it to his assistant.
Unexpectedly, according to Rava,
you'd be chayev. So therefore, the original shomer would be chayev for anything. Our Mishnah seems to prove that point by using the word roya rather than acher. And the answer is Amri. They say no, loy. No, because the Mishnah may just be talking about a typical case. Typically, what do you do with an animal? Whether that's in your cave, you give it to a shepherd. Maybe the Mishnah does mean to imply that the same thing applies no matter who you gave it to. Maybe Shemesh Shemassel Shemer is Potter, as the Gemara discusses there, the Machlokes between Rav and Rav Yechman there.
So why would we talk about a Roy if you mean that?
Because the Mishnah is telling us a typical case. Just like when the Torah talks about Nezikin, and it mentions the Shur, and we said at the end of the previous paragraph, Shur, Echad Shur, Echad Toba Heim Achayev, because it's typical for a Shur to gore. The same thing over here. The Mishnah used the word Roya, because it's typical to give an animal to a Roya, not necessarily to say only a Roya, nobody else.
If it's typical for a Roya, maybe the Mishnah means typical only and not.
No, but that's the thing. We could assume, we can't prove necessarily the Mishnah. You can't prove. That's all we want to say, according to the second version. It's true. The halacha in the end is like rubber. It is true. You can't prove that necessarily from the wording of our Mishnah.
Can extend beyond.
It could, because it could be Roya, but also anybody else as well.